Owning an investment property can be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Heritage Realty Property Management, they handle the challenges for you, ensure it's rented, maintained, and gets the highest return possible, while you just collect the check. With over 50 years' experience, you can trust Heritage Realty to provide the property care you want and rental knowledge you need. Visit heritagerealtyknox.com to connect with the team more landlords trust. Heritage Realty. We treat your property as if it were our own.
All right, 601. Starting lineups with you for your Wednesday morning, 656-9900. 1-866-656-9900. SEC strength of schedules through the eyes of Barrett Salee at CBS Sports. Not only that, but the ACC has released their scheduling model, and you can take a look at just how wacky things are going to get this year in the Atlantic Coast Conference. We'll have all that for you before 9 a.m. this morning. But what you missed from your Tuesday, we have it for you early on your Wednesday. We call this the morning buzz here on the starting lineup. All right, Will West, good morning to you. Yesterday, the University of Tennessee and the Southeastern Conference, they released each school's conference opponents for the 22-23 season as part of their 18-game league schedule. All right, quickly write this down. Tennessee's home slate is going to feature this year Alabama, Arkansas, Auburn, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Missouri, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. But the most important parts, what you need to know about next year's home schedule, Will, the Vols are going to have home and home scheduled with, as they do every year, Kentucky, Carolina, Vandy. But this year, they're going to add Auburn and Mississippi State to the slate. So you got to go to the Plains and you got to go to the Hump again this year.
Yeah, there you go. That's not, you know, doubling that, those two being your double, not bad.
Yeah.
Now, you could do a whole lot worse than that. But for Tennessee basketball, it should be a very, very good year. My expectation is to take a step from where they were last year. And that's going to be really come down to guys knocking down shots, running the offense through Josiah Jordan, James Moore, than you did in the past, and having a little bit better play when it comes to the interior.
Vols get a chance to see new Mississippi State coach Chris Janis twice next year. Anybody who doesn't know who Chris Janis is, he was the head coach of that New Mexico State team that was creating a lot of chaos this past year. So a new face you see both times, double times in the SEC next year. Vols looks like they got themselves a quite a tough schedule, boys. Remember, they went 16-0 at home last year in SEC play, so keep that in mind.
All right, Freddie Freeman has fired his agent.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Freddie, and there have been a lot of reporting in the last 24 hours or so about Freddie Freeman. One, that he heard the other side from Alex Anthopoulos and was mad at his agent for the way that the agent handled things at the end.
Yep.
Two, it sounds like he was a little upset with one of the reports was that the agent, without Freddie knowing about it, went to the Braves and offered them a couple of ultimatums right at the end, right before a deal was done
Matt
Olson. And the Braves balked, and Freddie ended up going somewhere else. And so now Freddie's, spoke to the Braves, spoke to the front office, spoke to former teammates, and feels better about the situation. So Freddie's fired his agent. Clayton Kershaw and some Dodgers not particularly happy about the way Freddie's handling things right now. Freddie did say, I'm happy to be a Dodger.
All right, so Clayton Kershaw had to come out during the weekend series in Atlanta and says, yeah, we're really glad that Freddie Freeman's here. Hopefully he realizes the team that he plays for now, and when he gets used to being an L.A. Dodger, he'll really like it. Question one, was Kershaw throwing shots at Freddie Freeman being like, dude, look down at the jersey you're wearing and remind yourself of what clubhouse you get changed in?
That was, okay, so Kershaw is like a really, 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 really Christian dude, right?
Yeah.
So this is Clayton Kershaw. I've been a Dodgers fan forever. Kershaw's been a Dodger forever.
Yeah.
He has never, ever, ever done anything like this. This is his version of through the media calling his teammate out saying, get your stuff together.
Okay.
Handle your business in private.
Yeah.
Realize where you're at now and do your job.
So you think the whole teary-eyed press conference and all that kind of rubbed him the wrong way?
I think that some of the reports and some of the information leaking of, well, I would have signed here, I wish I would have signed here, and all this stuff, I think that rubs Clayton Kershaw the wrong. I think Clayton Kershaw is looking out for the team and doesn't want there to be a schism, and I think that's him stepping in saying, get your house in order.
Washington Commanders wide receiver Terry McLaurin is signing a 3-year extension worth up to $71 million in new money. That places him among the NFL's five highest paid wide receivers in the NFL, according to ESPN. Guys, Terry McLaurin is a top five highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League. Look, don't get me wrong. I love the possession receiver in Washington, but Terry McLaurin making top five money in the NFL,
really, really stupid.
The signing bonus of $28 million is the largest ever given out to a wide receiver. I repeat, Terry McLaurin is making the most bonus money in NFL history, just ahead of DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, and Julio Jones. I like Terry McLaurin. The Colts were apparently breathing down the Commanders' neck, trying to get them to accept a trade to send McLaurin to Indianapolis. Is Terry McLaurin, should he be paid as a top five wide receiver in the NFL?
No, but none of these wide receivers should be paid where they're getting paid right now. So, right. You know, if you're going to do stupid things, win stupid prizes.
I'm just blown away that the Commanders are throwing this kind of money around, and it's to a position that, yeah, they need, but they also would need a quarterback that can show that they can get in the football as well.
Yep, absolutely. And finally, Major League Baseball, Braves topped the Phillies 5-3. Freddie Freeman's replacement, Matt Olson, went yard twice in that one. It was the Guardians over the Twins, 3-2. Their skid ends there. They had really struggled after taking control of the AL yep. Central last week. Now that lead for the Twins is down to just 3 games. Yankees over the A's 2-1. Blue Jays topped the Red Sox 6-5. Astros blew out the Mets 9-1. All right, so let me ask you this about baseball. We're going to have two divisions that are close, aren't we? And everything else is going to be five games plus.
You're definitely going to have the NL West
and NL Central.
And the NL Central.
And everything else is going to be somewhere between 5 games to 12 or 21 in some cases, if you look at the West and the AL East.
East, West, Central, I think the Twins end up streaking ahead after the All-Star break. I think the Mets end up streaking ahead once they get 100% healthy. They right now are essentially working with 21 players on the roster.
And they're still with a 4-game winning streak. That's what I'm saying. I have mentioned this before that, hey, we all know how this movie goes. Mets get hurt and the Braves end up winning that division. But if they're doing what they're doing right now while they're waiting to get healthy. Yeah.
And there's so many people who are blowing up my inbox or my Twitter being like, Ivan, you seen the lead dwindle? You seen the lead? And I just don't reply. But what I want to say to them is, do you watch 162 games?
Yeah.
What happens if the Braves do overtake New York?
But it just
New York's just going to return serve. September.
It doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot in the way of
there's division.
Gonna be there's not going to be no dramatics. There's not going to be a lot of high drama towards the end of the season as we get into these divisional chases.
Seems very clean cut.
Maybe the wild card ends up being something that's a little bit more exciting.
Well, that's what happens when you let half the league in.
Yeah.
Even the teams that are below 500, guess what? They're even flirting for a playoff spot at the penultimate week or 2 weeks to go in the regular season. Will West, if you stop by heritagerealtyknox.com, you're going to see the latest in technology from all of our friends who want to protect your investment like it's their own. It's our friends at Heritage Realty.
HeritageRealtyKnox.com, a boutique firm that focuses on you, the client, over the needs of the sales pipeline. Bringing together buyers and sellers in East Tennessee, amazing when it comes to property management. That is Heritage Realty.
All right, so you look ahead at the SEC strength of schedule through the eyes of Barrett Salee. One SEC East team he believes has quite the easy path to the end of the regular season. And another here locally he believes that might have a tough go at it through their SEC slate. We'll let you take a peek and give you an idea of what the SEC East landscape can look like by the end of the season through the eyes of Barrett Salee next here on the starting lineup. 99.1, you're listening to The Sports Animal. Good morning to you, Eric Kane. How about an update?
The Southeastern Conference has announced that men's basketball conference opponents for the next season. Tennessee's permanent home-and-home opponents include Kentucky, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt, while additional home-and-home series next season include Auburn and Mississippi State. Times, dates, and television information will be released at a later date. Tennessee baseball's Tony Vitello has been named the Southeast Region Coach of the Year by the American Baseball Coaches Association. The Vols have won both the regular season and tournament SEC titles, finishing the campaign with a record-setting 57 wins. And in baseball, the Braves took down the Phillies 5-3, the Reds down the Cubs 5-3, the Yankees got by the A's 2-1, and the Astros drilled the Mets 9-1. It is 6:09. We'll take a look at CBS Sports' Barrett Salee and the strength of schedule for the Southeastern Conference this upcoming football season when CSL returns. Good morning. I'm Eric Kane.
6:16, the starting lineup for your Wednesday. Taking a peek at the SEC strength of schedules for the upcoming football season through the eyes of Barrett Salee. Several teams have difficult paths that they want to get back to the college football playoffs. For other teams, it's just going to end up being just sending the pigs out to slaughter. That's exactly what it's going to be this year. Let's get right to it. Team with the most difficult strength of schedule this year is going to be Auburn. Remember, Auburn, not only do they have road matchups with Alabama and a road game at Ole Miss, but Will, remember, they have to return that home-and-home matchup with Penn State. This time, Penn State's going to come down to the Plains this year. Brian Harsin, look, we're both surprised Harsin has a job right now. This is going to end up being kind of the swan song for him, I believe, when they get their I's dotted in all season.
Yeah, so it's they don't get a bye until week 8 either.
Good luck with
that. That's the thing that's not great. They've got the game against Georgia, and then they turn around and go to a home at Ole Miss after that. Right after you play, get banged up against Georgia, and then you get your bye week after that. So look, Brian Harsin will be fired in the bye week. I think that's what we're looking at here. Like, am I wrong there?
No, I thought maybe Auburn would kind of want to wait till the end of the season to get all their ducks in the order. Maybe this is them jumping ahead of the game. We fired you during the bye week. We know we have an opening. Coaches can start realizing that we're going to probably give them a ring, and then that's how it plays out.
Oh, well, also, it's the Les Miles effect, right? Like, remember when Les Miles, the second they got a chance to fire Les Miles, they went ahead and fired him just in case.
Yep.
The second that LSU had a chance to fire Ogeron, they went ahead and fired him just in case. Because they would have fired him last year because Brian Harsin's terrible and horrible and not a nice guy. And when you put the two of those together, that's a bad combination. And so they would have fired him last year, except dopey fans that don't know what they're looking at thought that, you know, fought to keep Brian Harsin's job because, like, you know, he's just coaching with strength.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just a strong personality. That's what we need around here because they don't know what they're doing or looking at. And so Brian Harsin's still at Auburn.
Right.
He's going to get his brains beat in. He's going to get fired as quickly as they possibly can fire him when there's enough public sentiment there. And they're going to move on from Brian Harsin. It doesn't look like the games themselves are necessarily any tougher than other people are playing.
Sure.
But wait until you get to week 8 for a bye when you have that kind of a murderer's row at the beginning of the schedule.
Exactly.
And you play Georgia. And then your game at Ole Miss isn't the end of the world, but you're getting it right after you play Georgia and right at the back end of a bye. So a game that would have been a coin flip game is probably a sure loss game.
So that's Auburn at 1. Vandy comes in at number 2. Arkansas at 3. And then Will Barrett-Salee believes Tennessee is the fourth toughest schedule in the SEC this year. Again, dates at Death Valley, dates against Pittsburgh in the non-conference. And then, oh yeah, by the way, you still have your 3 tough contests, September with Florida, October with Bama, November with Georgia.
Yeah, the Arkansas thing is really interesting to me, Dick, because one of the reasons he points out is you open the season with – you're playing 2 mid-majors.
Yep.
But it's Cincinnati at BYU.
Again, mid-majors who, on the right year, you catch them, they're probably flirting with the college football playoff.
And so it looks like it's a, it looks like it's kind of soft that you're not playing a power conference team there, but you're playing Cincinnati right after the college football playoff, and you're playing BYU in October.
So let me ask you immediately, when you hear Cincinnati, doesn't it kind of lose a little bit of luster knowing that Desmond Ritter and a lot of those guys, Sauce Gardner, all those dudes are gone.
Kobe is gone.
Yeah.
So,
but it's Luke Fickell. So if there's anybody who can kind of reload that, reload the situation, it's probably Luke Fickell.
Defensive coordinator's gone to Notre Dame. So you're right. You lost a lot there. But it's not the same as playing the Cincinnati team that you faced the last 2 seasons.
Yeah,
that's still a tough one. Going to BYU on October 15th, when everybody else is going to catch a breather with their mid-major opponent during the middle of the season, and Arkansas has decided to jump right into the fire.
Arkansas fans who've never been to the state of Utah are in for a culture shock. I'm just going to tell you that right now. If you've never been to Provo, Utah, you are in for a culture shock, and make sure you pack a flask. That's all I'm going to say.
Tennessee comes in at number 4. Is that too high, too low, or about right to you?
Again, based on their schedule this year, that road trip to LSU, and look, I guess you kind of have to give Pittsburgh credit because they're the defending ACC champions, but they're out, they're out Kenny Pickett. They're out the monster offense they had last year.
If that kid from USC was any good, he'd have been good already. You know what I mean?
So to me, Pat Narduzzi's defense is always going to graduate, and it's always going to have just the next guy step up. But Will, to me, I think a lot of people knew that Tennessee was kind of in for a run of it when you talk about the big 3 they play every year, and then you add a road game at LSU. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
What is LSU? Because this could be too low for me, depending on what LSU is. LSU still has talent. LSU has been a train wreck. You're taking the most player-friendly coach you possibly can find on the face of the earth, where literally he lets you commit violent crimes and doesn't do anything about it.
Yep.
And you're going the exact other way in Brian Kelly, who's the least player-friendly coach in all of college football.
To me, LSU season comes down to one player. And it's not what he does on the football field. It's what he does off the football field. I think Jaden Daniels might be a cancer. Because everything they've said about him at Arizona State has been just nothing positive.
Yeah.
Can he single-handedly come into Baton Rouge, win that job, and then when he wins that job, brings that kind of I'm Jaden Daniels attitude, and then it absolutely just tears the walls, the drywall, everything off that locker room.
The reports out of Arizona that no one was sad to see him leave said a lot. And this was even while he was there.
Right.
There were the reports from the Arizona Republic and things like that. You don't see the local media report that the teammates want a guy gone in season in college football, especially a young guy. That absolutely doesn't happen.
Kaner, I'm not asking you to be inside source of LSU as well, because you're already got your hands full doing things here in Knoxville. If I said Jaden Daniels starting quarterback LSU week 1, would you say yeah? Or would you believe that they truly still have a quarterback competition with 60 some odd days to go in Baton Rouge?
I would put my money on him being the starter. Now, that doesn't mean that it's guaranteed right now.
Again,
they have Miles Brennan coming back. They have that five-star quarterback that I'm blanking on coming in as well. But, I mean, I think Jaden Daniels will win that battle, and so that wouldn't shock me at all. And then, I mean, when you look at LSU, it's just a team that's going to be rebuilding, but you got a decent quarterback, you've got talent on the roster, you've got guys who can rush the passer, you have an All-American wide receiver, and you have a great coach. So when you look at it from a Tennessee perspective, Tennessee, of course, draws Alabama every year. You draw LSU on the road this year. You got to take care of business against Georgia, Kentucky, Florida. I mean, it's certainly worthy of being at least a top five tough schedule in the SEC.
Can I go ahead and jump down to a team I really want to get to?
Yeah.
Kentucky has the third easiest schedule in all of the SEC.
Well, because Louisville sucks now. So because of that, that's your tough out-of-conference opponent. You're getting Georgia, South Carolina at home. You get three straight home games to close. So that's part of it, is the way that the schedule finishes and the fact that Louisville's not good. And so when you put those together, like Tennessee's going to play the defending ACC champions.
Right.
Kentucky's going to play a 7-win team. And that's kind of what's the, you know, why that difference is there.
Kentucky 12, Missouri 13. They have Ole Miss. I say they, he. Barrett Salee at CBS Sports has Ole Miss with the easiest schedule in the SEC this year.
You want to talk about easy? You want to talk about easy Ole Miss?
Yeah.
Vanderbilt is your crossover, yep. Of course. And you play Georgia Tech.
So you get Kentucky and Vanderbilt as your East opponents, right? And you got Georgia Tech as your non-conference opponent.
Ten years ago, Vanderbilt and Kentucky would be a cakewalk. I mean, Kentucky's a good football team now, but that's still easy.
Yeah, it's still very easy compared to Tennessee's getting Alabama and LSU in the same season.
Yep.
Right? Is there a cross opponent, cross division opponents?
So I ask you, should we perhaps be maybe adding a little bit more caution, automatically having Tennessee ahead of Kentucky this year in the SEC standings?
I think this is the rebuilding year for Kentucky.
Okay.
Maybe
this easy schedule
cycle up, cycle down. But because it's easier, Kentucky could end up having, you know, that's one of the reasons why I think they're an 8-win team this year, Kentucky.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Tennessee's on pace to be, right? I mean, the over-under set is 7.5. I mean, even if they're cycling down, if that's still 8 wins, I mean, that's kind of on par with what Tennessee's supposed to be this year.
Yeah, I think Tennessee's in 9. I think they're at 8. And I could see Kentucky going to 7, possibly, but I'm not really buying that. I look at it in a normal year, like I would say this is a 7-5 Kentucky team. They'll cycle back up to 9 or 10 wins next year, and that's just kind of what you're looking at with them. But to your point, they, you know, the schedule being easy, they probably will finish with 8 wins this year.
I think Kentucky will be more likely to cycle down next year because you lose the leading rusher in the SEC, you'll lose Will Levis, you'll lose a couple of those other players. But regardless, if they are cycling down, to your point, they lose a couple more games because they won 10 games last year.
Right.
Now, that's 8 games, and that's kind of where Tennessee's on par with. So I just thought that was kind of
I was saying they'd win 10 games because Will Levis isn't there anymore. That's what I was saying.
Maybe so.
Yeah, but Will Levis will be a top 5 pick in the NFL draft, making millions of dollars.
Oh, man.
For your New York Giants.
Yep. No. That's got Carolina Panthers written all over it, doesn't it?
Yeah, because they aren't going to trade for Baker Mayfield because Baker's starting week 1 for the Cleveland Browns.
Baker said both sides have moved on. So,
oh, have they?
I believe Baker.
You know what? Believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when I see it. Yeah. Hey, we moved from the SEC to the ACC. Have you seen the ACC's new scheduling model? Have you seen what some of the scheduling looks like for some of those teams, both in the Coastal and in the Atlantic? We'll give you an idea of really what you're getting yourself into when it comes to ACC scheduling models next year on the Starting Lineup. 99.1, you're listening to The Sports Animal. Conference has officially announced a new scheduling model that's going to go into effect will beginning next year. So this will be the last year for the Atlantic and the Coastal divisions, and they're going to be moving to a model with 3 permanent opponents and 2 separate 5-team rotations that are going to flip every other year.
Yeah, it's so they're going with the 3-5-5 model, right? And so that is 3 permanent opponents,
I like it.
5 that flips. You'll get everybody within a 3-year window. And if you're an SEC fan, you need to pay attention to this.
I like it.
Frankly, if you're a fan of every conference, the Big Ten is the one that I wonder if they're going to hold out. Everybody else is going to this, right?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Because it's good for TV and because it allows you to get play more opponents more quickly. And also, I mean, let's be very honest. Is South Carolina, Missouri a big rivalry everybody's trying to hold on to?
Snooze.
Yeah. Is Kentucky, Georgia something that anybody cares? No one cares. No one cares, right? Like these rivalries, no one cares. And so people are just as likely to watch Tennessee play LSU as they are to watch Tennessee play, I mean, I hate to say it, but the Tennessee to play Alabama these days.
Yeah.
They are. You'll pull close to the same ratings. If Tennessee's good, it'll pull ratings. And if Tennessee's not, it won't. And that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. So what they'll do is try to get as many of these games as possible. And you'll Tennessee, I think they're going to the 3-6. What do you think that the SEC is going to?
I would say that you're probably right about the 3-6. It's some type of rotation that they can see as many of the SEC schools in the shortest time possible. That's by doing that, you're going to be able to you're going to be seeing more campuses, especially when Oklahoma and Texas come into fold. I guess for me, it's just trying to identify who those three common opponents are going to be.
The one thing that I wonder with that is that they're going to have the top half of the league is going to play the top half of the league as the permanent opponents, and the bottom half of the league is going to play the bottom half of the league more often. And I'm like, that's
kind of getting that vibe in the ACC right now.
Is that it is too?
I'm looking at these common opponents for some of these teams,
yeah.
And we'll just kind of looking at, okay, this team faces this team, or that team faces that team. That's kind of the vibe I'm getting, because I'm seeing a lot of North Carolina heavy schedule.
Yep.
I'm seeing a lot of Clemson heavy schedule. I'm seeing a lot of Florida State heavy schedule, Miami heavy schedule. You're right. The uppers are facing the uppers and the downers and vice versa.
So it also is a little bit of who have been your historic rivals and sure. or geographic. There's a little bit of that. Because Clemson, Georgia Tech, you know what I mean, is a little bit historic. And then you get, look, they get two they want and one they don't. And that's what you get here. You get Boston College gets Miami and Syracuse. They also get Pitt. Clemson gets Florida State and Georgia Tech. They also get NC State.
Right.
Duke gets North Carolina State, and Wake. Those are the three that Duke's going to play. So Clemson, Miami, and then Syracuse for Florida State. So you got two you want, two you don't. Although Miami getting Boston College, Florida State, Louisville's weird. But I guess it's just the numbers are weird, and no one cares about Louisville, so how do you work Louisville in there? No one cares about Syracuse, how do you work Syracuse in there?
And it's an odd number of teams, so somebody's going to get kind of that quirky schedule.
Yep.
Congratulations, here are the two teams who get the quirky schedule.
Yeah, so I don't know, it is what it is. It's not bad necessarily, but I don't know that there's anything exciting about this for the ACC, but there's not a lot exciting about ACC football to begin with.
I did this, and maybe this just shows you kind of how my brain works when looking at these opponents. Kaner, tell me if you did the same thing, because you and I usually share a lot of common, just a lot of similarities when it comes to things like this. Did you immediately go to the permanent opponents for the ACC schools and immediately jump to Clemson and go, all right, let's see the soft, you know, the SAWFT path they get to the college football playoff expanded or wherever it's at right now?
Yeah, I mean, I went to Clemson.
And I was just like, of course, Georgia Tech squeezed in there. I try to find kind of the wart on the schedule, and then I drop down to Florida State, assuming, will they ever be good again, Will? And I saw, okay, there's Clemson. They keep the rivalry with Miami for the Seminole War Canoe, and then you have Syracuse. To me, I just try to see what did ACC do to try to protect their breadwinners to make sure they continue to find success. Clemson, okay, but you already kind of pointed it out. Look, there's the Florida State Georgia Tech rivalry, but then we got a 30-year opponent with Raleigh.
Florida State, who you want to see. Georgia Tech, who's historic, because, right. You know, Georgia and South Carolina, the proximity there. Really, Georgia's the one that Clemson fans want to play, but Georgia Tech's the, you know what I mean, is the closest thing you can get. And then you get stuck with one that you don't really care about. And that's kind of what it seems like they're doing. And do you think that's how they'll do it in the SEC? Do you guys think that you'll get, like, Tennessee will get two games, so you're like, oh, look at that. And then one, you're like, oh. Why are we playing Missouri?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know,
we're talking about for permanent opponents.
Yeah.
I mean, Tennessee's got, you can make the case that Tennessee's got, you know, four or five rivals that you could play. So I think regardless, you're not going to be missing anything out. Like if Tennessee goes a 3-6 model for the SEC, it will be, you know, Alabama no matter what, because they're not taking that game off the schedule. Vanderbilt will be there no matter what, because they played for over 100 years.
Vanderbilt will be the number one. They have to have Vanderbilt there because they played 100 years since in-state rivalry. They have to stick it with Vanderbilt.
And then after
you
that,
say the same thing about Kentucky, though, with the border war over 100 years?
And then after that, it would be either, you know, Kentucky right to your north, or
South Carolina would be the other one. That's what I saw a lot of people speculate about.
I mean, or Georgia or Florida. I mean, Florida probably down the list because it's only been a thing since 92, but I mean, any way you spin it for Tennessee, I think you're going to be okay. But, you know, would you go regionally? Would you go straight up to Kentucky, you know, to do that? Or would you go down to Georgia? I don't know. It'll be interesting. I just know for Tennessee's sake, two teams will be on that schedule in that 3-6 model every single year. It'll be Alabama and Vanderbilt. And I will be shocked if that's not the case.
Yeah, if they go 3-6, that is the way.
If they go 3-6.
Yeah, if they go the 1-7.
Vanderbilt.
Yeah, it'll be Vanderbilt. That's it.
I agree.
Would you say the SEC is the next conference to announce their next and their newest scheduling model?
Yeah. I thought it was going to happen in the spring meetings.
Yeah, they thought it was going to happen in the spring meetings.
Right, but I didn't know if maybe the Pac-12 or somebody jumps ahead of them, or perhaps maybe the Big Ten jumps up.
Pac-12 could. Because they're the other ones we're waiting on. And how long does it take for the SEC to get a legitimate vote from Texas and Oklahoma and they get something settled? Because it looks like you're negotiating between the bottom half league and the top half of the league trying to get to 9 games. And so, because ESPN would like to have 9 games. So maybe it takes a little longer to do that, but they've said this summer, right? I mean, I keep seeing that later that July or August, maybe even media days.
Yeah, so I when it didn't happen at spring meetings, because I thought that's when it was going to happen, I just kind of assumed, you know, the big news that shook the sports world last year came out at SEC spring meetings, media days, so maybe it'll happen again here at media days in a couple of weeks.
It's Eric Kane, Will West, Tyler Ivins. Could the SEC be following the ACC suit? Again, you look at the schedule, 3-5-5 is the model for the Atlantic Coast Conference with 3 permanent opponents and those rotating 5-5s. Hour number 2 of the program, I want to take a peek at some of these teams and what it could possibly mean for Tennessee and some of the regional or territorial, what you guys just mentioned, some of where they are when it comes to border states, and if Tennessee could get a little bit of an idea what they're going to be doing, much like the ACC kind of broke down here yesterday. 99.1, you're listening to The Sports Animal.
The SEC has announced the men's basketball conference opponents for next season. Tennessee's permanent home-and-home opponents will be Kentucky, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt, while additional home-and-home series this year will include Auburn and Mississippi State. Time, states, and TV destinations will be announced at a later date. The ACC plans to eliminate divisions in 2023 and move to a 3-5-5 scheduling model. This means each ACC team will have 3 permanent opponents and the other 10 opponents rotating on an every other year basis. And in Major League Baseball, the Braves took down the Phillies 5-3, the Reds down the Cubs 5-3, the Yankees got by the A's 2-1, and the Astros all over the Mets 9-1. It is 6:41. We will have Woodja coming up next here on TSL. Good morning. I'm Eric Kane. All right, gentlemen, Barrett Salee released the SEC strength of schedule rankings on CBSSports.com and lists Kentucky with the 3rd easiest slate in 2022. Love or leave it, you give Kentucky the edge over Tennessee in the East due to their easier schedule.
I mean, guys, maybe I just needed a couple of more bits of information put in front of me before I start maybe dictating who goes where. Georgia 1. Then it's who's 2, who's 3. Boys, right now I'm going to say I will give Kentucky the edge, the slight edge, just because, again, who the Cats got? They don't have a trip to LSU. You know, they don't have any Alabamas on their schedule this year. So because of that, those 2 big SEC West opponents, I say as of right now on June 29th, Kentucky by as smallest of margins in the East.
Yeah, Tennessee's going to be 5-3 in the SEC, or Tennessee's going to be 5-3 in the SEC. Kentucky's going to be 4-4. Winner of that game's going to win 9 games. Winner of that, loser of that game's going to win 8 games. Tennessee's going to beat Kentucky. So I leave this. Tennessee will be finish ahead of Kentucky this year.
Buster only is reporting that Freddie Freeman will be changing representation following an emotional return to Atlanta last weekend. Love or leave it, Freeman's agent is the reason the former MVP is no longer a Brave.
I love-ish this.
I'm sorry, what's that?
I love-ish this.
Love-ish-ish this.
I love-ish this. I think that Freeman would have done it, but I also think the Braves wanted to take a hometown discount. But I do think if the love was shown and the agent's the one that kept the love from happening.
Yeah.
So because of that, if the agent hadn't done what he did, Freddie would have taken the hometown discount. But I also think that
would have been his second.
So here's the thing, though. Let's remember, even the reports about this are Freeman's agent came back right before the Matt Olson trade was finished.
Right.
Right. They offered him this contract before the lockout, and then it was kind of like, well, whatever, we're trading for Matt Olson, according to the reports yesterday from 3 different outlets. So I think it would have gotten done, but I think Freddie would have had to take less, and I don't know that Freddie would have taken that much less.
I think both are kind of at fault here. Yeah, the agency kind of threw their weight around and said, this is Fred Freeman we're talking about here. Yeah. He's a former MVP. He's already taken a discount. We're not going to let you, Alex Anthopoulos, continue to dictate what we're going to do. Alex Anthopoulos kind of took it as they essentially just told us ultimatums. We don't play with ultimatums. We're sorry, Freddie, but we have a deal pending right now with Oakland.
I will say, Eric, you did mention that during all of this that the agents come back with a couple of – they had something worked out, and the agent came back and threw some ultimatums out there, and it didn't work out. It turns out that was absolutely true. I do wonder – if it was Freddie had to take the deal before the lockout, and then after that, that was it. That's the part of the reporting that's come out the last couple of days that's a little bit that has me a little shaky on that, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, my insider baseball. I mean, I heard that this was, and not just here recently after the season was over. I mean, this happened a couple times throughout the season last year. Like, they had deals in place, and Freddie's people, their representation just kind of came through and said, "Okay, well, now let's do this now." And so, I mean, it's an ugly way to end what was just such a great, great marriage, right?
Just a caveat, if I will. Freddie Freeman said he always just anticipated he would be a Brave. He just said, you know what? There was no rush. There might not have been any type of just, you know, hurry to get a deal done because they just felt like that he was going to end up a Brave. Do you think that maybe Freddie is to blame just a hair, because it's just like, why didn't you sit down before in spring training the year before? Why didn't you find a way to get the deal done at this point in time?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think there's some fault on the Braves side as well. But I mean, at the end of the day, Freddie's Freddie, right?
Right.
And you know, you can control your agent, right?
Are you surprised that it was that so many people, now that Freddie has come through, have just been like, I couldn't care less? They're not booing him, or they don't hate him, or they don't want to see him do bad, but they're just like, I could not care less now. Like when he came to the plate and it was like 60-40 cheers, boos.
No. Did you watch that live?
Absolutely, I did.
I did too, and I thought it was overwhelming, like we all said it would be. Just
It sounded like there was about 40% booze in there on the video.
60-40.
I did not see it live. I just saw the video that was shared on social.
I thought it was overwhelming. And then, of course, when he got his ring, there wasn't a boo. And I mean,
yeah. That's what I'm saying. So you had the crying, you had the ring, but then the first plate appearance, I was just like, okay.
I don't know. I think people saying, like, I could care less, you're just lying to yourself, to be completely honest.
Yeah, you're trying to convince yourself of that. For the people that say they don't care about
Freddie. You're calling Brian Rice a liar?
Essentially, yeah. if that's what he's saying, then yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, Quayle, I know we got to move on, but I do credit Anthropolis for going out and get an all-star Matt Olson. I mean, Matt Olson's going to be
good. Two home runs last night.
Matt Olson's going to be good Brave for the next 8 years. So less than a month before the start of training camp, the Commanders locked up key piece by handing Terry McLaurin a 3-year, $71 million extension. Love or leave it, the Ohio State product being a top five highest paid wide receiver.
No, but at the same time, look, Will made a great point less than 30 minutes ago. Who right now playing wide receiver isn't getting paid?
No.
Stupid amounts of money. McLaurin just reset the bonus market. $28 million bonus is the highest ever handed out to a receiver in NFL history. All right.
Here's the thing. Is he a top five wide receiver in football? No. Is he a top 10 wide receiver in football? No. So I'm going to leave this, of course. But I also, I mean, it's all stupid. So at this point, let your wide receiver walk. Don't give them money. Draft someone else.
But
that's what you do.
Every team needs a Terry McLaurin. I mean, that guy is just possession.
I'm just saying you can find that somewhere else.
Maybe you can, but I mean, Ohio State product getting paid. Again.
Give me the Wish.com version of Terry McLaurin for $8 million versus Terry McLaurin at 25.
Don't you worry, I'll probably draft him this year on my fantasy team.
And again, we can name 6-7 wide receivers we'd rather have over him right now on the spot.
I mean, I'm just looking at the top receivers last year. Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, Devontae Adams, Jamar Chase, Deebo Samuel, Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs. Your boy at New Orleans, DeAndre Hopkins, you'd rather have over him.
A.J. Brown's not even mentioned on there.
A.J. Brown we haven't mentioned yet. Absolutely. You take A.J. Brown over him. So yeah.
I mean, at least at minimum, right?
And that's before I start splitting hairs with what do you do with Tyler Lockett? What do you do with Johnson? What do you do with D.J. Moore? What do you do with Mike Williams?
Yeah.
Fair.
And I like McLaurin, but
yeah,
that price, that is embarrassing.
You know what, though? If you have everything else going on with the Commanders, they could use some headlines that it doesn't involve the owner trying duck a subpoena.
Hey, Dan Snyder's subpoena. Well, we just extended our wide receiver. You guys never talk about the good stories.
And good for him, right? But gosh, bad on the team once again. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has turned down the opportunity to participate in the 2022 Home Run Derby, saying he wants to focus on his health of his wrist. Love or leave it, Vlad Jr. is the most prolific home run hitter in baseball today.
I will leave it for Judge, but I think he's two. I do. I think if he's healthy, he's number two right now behind Aaron Judge.
He said it. Judge is one, Vlad's two. Neither of which I think we will never see either of them participate in the home run derby.
Tell me if I'm wrong here. Well, Alonzo,
Vlad's done it a couple of times.
But he won't do it again.
Alonzo's three, right?
I mean, maybe. He's probably up there in the top five or six.
He's always in that top five for home runs every year, period.
Shohei's
point blank
up there
now.
Just because of who he is and the shot that he has.
Yeah.
You know who we need to be talking about because he had a slow start, nobody's talking about him anymore? Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah.
Kyle Schwarber, but he's like Doug Mankiewicz or whatever his name was back in the day. He's
very
like that.
Did we just get a Doug Mankiewicz reference?
So or what was the guy's name for the Orioles that was strikeout or
Chris
home run?
Chris
Davis. Chris Davis. That's the one.
Crush Davis.
That's what Kyle Schwarber is right now.
You just wanted to say Crush Davis on the air.
I did. Last one here. Kenny Pickett told the Pat McAfee Show on Tuesday that the Steelers have high expectations for 2022. Love or leave it, Pittsburgh is a legitimate contender in the AFC North.
Come on. No. Let's be real here. I think you need to sell high on Najee Harris. We already have. Hey, Kane, remember when Will was on vacation and Chase Claypool says he believes he's a top three wide receiver in the NFL?
Yeah.
I like that he believes it.
Yeah. Come on. I'm glad everybody's got some just like puff out chest. Like I love how everybody's high expectations. Pittsburgh's going to be the worst team in that division.
Pittsburgh is going to finish second in that division.
And Kenny Pickett's not starting.
Yeah, Kenny Pickett's not starting. Here's the thing. Look at how terrible they were last year. They were 9-7 and were a half game back of Cincinnati for winning that division. They're going to continue. You know who's on that sideline? Mike Tomlin.
They have the second best head coach in the NFL right now.
Point blank, you're absolutely right.
They also have TJ Watt, but what's that offense going to
do? If you told me I could have the greatest head coach of all time or the second best coach in the NFL right now, I would absolutely take Tomlin over Belichick today.
No, you don't believe that.
For the future, absolutely I'll take Tomlin for the future.
We don't have enough time to do this, but you don't believe that.
Yes, without question. Belichick's, he's got the hubris. Oh. The fact that you've got what's-his-name with the stinky beard.
This.
With the bad takes Andy beard. It's he's calling offensive plays
the
now.
End could
it
be
smells
near,
as bad as his beard.
The end could be near if you have Matt Patricia calling
yes,
your offensive
plays. That's what
plays.
I'm saying.
That's saying I'm bigger than the sport of football.
Yes, hubris.
However, it hasn't happened yet, so I'm not going to...
Say it right.
You know.
However,
it has not happened yet. But hubris. When it does... Here on TSL, we're going to say, told you so.
Equal talent on the field this season. And for the next 5 years, equal talent on the field the next 5 years, would you rather have Tomlin or Belichick?
Let me ask you a question. If I gave you an okay, Mike Tomlin.
No, don't get me wrong.
Mike Tomlin.
That's why I'm saying today I would take Tomlin.
Look at him always looking north.
I mean, but all time, Belichick's the greatest all time.
Okay, if you had a choice right now of walking around barefooted or having an amazing pair of New Balance Knoxville shoes in your feet, what would you have?
New Balance Knoxville Suburban Shopping Center. You're always buying local when you buy a New Balance Knoxville. Wide sizes, the extra wide sizes like I need, they have them. A New Balance Knoxville, you'll love the styles and colorways for summer. New Balance Knoxville.
I'm glad Will showed his work, because you can't just come on these airwaves and be like, I'd rather have Tomlin than Belichick.
Today, for the next 5 years, if you're even considering that Matt Patricia is going to call offensive plays for you, hubris. That's Ronda Rousey deciding she's a grappler and she's going to box Holly Holm.
Yep.
That's what it is, and you're going to get your nose busted.
10 minutes. Barrett Salih breaks down the strength of schedule of the SEC for 2022. Where does he have the Vols ranked? It's actually a pretty toughy. We'll let you know where he has those ranked. Not only that, but what you miss from your Tuesday for your Wednesday. The Morning Buzz is next here on the Starting Lineup.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot. Is that good for baseball? Yeah. That's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is that is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.